Dear Dhamma friends, good afternoon once again. Yesterday we attached some of the surface of the meritorious actions, meritorious causes, meritorious results or fruits, and then but mainly that of the right to say demeritorious causes, right to demeritorious, meaning that of the Dikpa interpreted it. Since this chapter is mainly focusing on the purification aspect, so of course I did say that there are these traditional way of describing the very nature of the demeritorious causes and effects. It's very important for us to know the traditional presentation to begin with, always. Be it with any kind of learning, whatever you're studying, whatever you're learning, first we must learn the original or the traditional way of presenting or of the, you know, the presentation aspect or the orientation aspect. It's very important, and this is personally my own feeling. And you know, the reason is because without it, if you jump right into what is most common right now, what is maybe most famous right now, let's say, then often I think there are a lot of gaps in terms of the history. Why very simply, why do we have to learn such ways, or why do we have to utilize this method? And there are often gaps in terms of there are a lot of doubts and questions about maybe the authenticity of maybe this new learning. So that's why to learn the original or the traditional aspects way is very important to begin with. Once you have a good understanding, you're used to it, then it's up to ourselves whether or not it's much easier to apply the traditional way or not. Also in terms of conveying to others that it is also easy in that way or not. So that's obviously comes later. Otherwise we will be left with a lot of questions, a lot of doubts, a lot of unknown areas, and that could also waste our time as well. So that's why, you know, it's wonderful that we have various interpretations, translations, because in other languages you may be able to carry certain weights or certain meanings, but probably have difficulty in bringing forth all the meaning forward. So therefore, having various interpretations, it helps us to understand. So, it basically touches all of this. So that's one. But besides that, in this case, in the case of the Buddhist Ramadana or the way of the Bodhisattva, learning this particular teaching, or then in other cases, any other teaching that you're learning, it's I think very beneficial and very meaningful. You first go through the traditional aspect of learning. That is, should you choose to, of course, learn or not. So now, having said that, then I'll just like to say a little bit about the negative karmas we are all explaining it in that way, or dimming it for its causality. So, yesterday in this translation, it was talking about terms like evil deeds and sins were used, and it might be simple to understand, it might not be. And so then I would just like to say a few words about it. Now in this case, just nothing to do with interpretation or translation or internalization of the language, but mainly that of the actual sort of nature of the negative karma, very simply. It's very important for us to know from the beginning that as it is described in the teaching, that the negative karmas or unfavorable karmas or whatever we call it, first of all, it has, as you know, it is simply not a part of our inherent nature at all. And just like I said yesterday, it is extremely momentary, it is extremely temporary. Temporary in the sense it doesn't stay true to its appearance. It continues to change, it continues to, let's say, move. And this is the good news, yes, that it means that that it's not something that we have to worry about ultimately, because it's something that's not a part of us. It's just something that can alone, because of maybe a lack of awareness, lack of understanding, lack of knowledge, lack of experience, something that corrupts, like a habit, but nothing more. So if you keep that in mind, then I keep that in mind, meaning by means of reminding oneself, focusing on this nature aspect by means of one's learning, by means of practice, by means of meditation, meaning focusing on this aspect, its nature, to basically ask ourselves, is it impermanent? Is it or is it the opposite, permanent, something that is changeable? So, by using extremely simple logic, depending on emotions in general, and particularly affective emotions during your reasoning, during your exam, while you're examining it, you just very professionally and very clearly, consciously examine it while you meditate, to focus on its nature, focusing in this case first of all the causes, very simply those would be summarize it in one, it's basically lack of knowledge or lack of experience. If you describe a little bit more of maybe the three roots, such as ignorance, desire, or attachment, and anger. So like that, I guess. But if you sort of simplify again once again, back into one, it's something that's sort of really very, how do I call this, to the origin, it's basically the lack of knowledge of a phenomenon that is caused by lack of knowledge and hangs on to something that thinks this exactly as it is experienced or exactly as it is appearing. So, if he meditate like this, then it can help us and it can go a long way. So this is, I think, very important for all of us to keep reminding oneself that it is not inherent at all. It is not a truly existing thing. So I think probably that sort of answers a lot of things. From there, then the various types of confusions, whether it's purifiable or not, or whether whether it can, let's say, truly destroy a part of us. So the various sort of strong questions that we have are also solved actually by focusing on its nature, by focusing on its the nature of it. So with that, then the rest of the applications, the rest of way of viewing it will all make sense in coming order. Of course, I think we all have one main question, which is that, which is very common, which is if it is purifiable, if it's true that it doesn't exist, if it's not inherent, how come that from time to time, or often it is the case where we feel overwhelmed, so we feel sort of overpowered, or bullied, muscled. For that, I personally feel that it's all due to sort of, first of all, lack of experience, one, and then having developed continuous habits simply due to lack of experience, lack of knowledge. And so therefore, over time, it aggregates more and more and more. Of course, it begins very simply, hardly sort of, noticeable. And then it aggregates on top, it starts to compound and to a point where it has accumulated to a point where it's sometimes not imaginable, I say, in terms of its weight, in terms of its power. So therefore then suddenly we have to when we feel obstructed by it, faces directly, then we are overwhelmed. And even if now think of a remedy or think of what means overcoming it, suddenly that sort of shock, that amazement sort of has captured yourself, so therefore sort of damages a little bit of the hope. So that's why before we come across, before we face moments of obstacles, it's very important for us to continuously reflect over and over again on this nature. Now, earlier I said to focus on its causes, and then now also to focus on its results, the effect, to see how powerful it is. Once it aggregates, how powerful it can be. So, by focusing on these two aspects, then automatically the one is providing experience just on the spot. Actually, not having the time to do so much, actually. Right there on the spot, where they are, let's say, for example, when they meditate, for example. In that very state, just by reflecting, and then, of course, bringing in one's own personal experience of yourself, of what you've heard of others, of what you've seen. Put all those together, and then, on the spot, you're already sort of strengthening your wisdom. And so therefore, automatically, there is sort of like a renunciation of any of, first of all, the causes, towards the causes and towards the effects. So, yes, I think that this is important, that we have that kind of mindset. Then, now, when we go through the various means, the various teachings that put our heart into, a little, and then make sense and conclude them. So then now, yesterday we finished at the 32nd stanza of the Loka, and today now we are here at the 33rd stanza. So, we cannot trust the wanting role of death. No, I'm not smiling at the Lord of Death. It's the other one, the wonderful one form. Some of the new. The task complete, the task complete or still to do, he will not wait. In health or sickness, therefore, none of us can trust our fleeting momentary lives. So basically focusing on utilizing, I think basically from here onwards, it mainly focuses on the ability or the means, what you call it, the remedies, the remedy aspect of the purification, so therefore by means of the exact antidote, antidote aspect, yes. And then we try to purify this, purify or basically disengage, renounce from the demeritorious or negative causes and then also from its results. And so therefore in this case, particularly in this Prabhupada, then we focus on the impermanent aspect of life, the fleeting aspects, the fragile aspect of life. And if you observe more closely, of course it's very, what do you call it? Absolutely, it's very true. Yes, it is very fragile, and it is very fleeting. No matter whichever you look at it, that it is constantly changing, it is constantly moving. And particularly now, in this case, it's a way of sort of bringing the realities, getting in touch with the reality, but in a sort of poetic, yes, I would like to say that. Meaning that the end of birth, yes, basically, is in another day. And so, if the karma, if the lifespan, if the merit, when it has exhausted its resources, let's say, then it's inevitable. And so, before it happens, you must now, let's see, you know, be realistic and see if there is anything to do. If there is, then before it happens, you must do it. And so, in a way, in a poetic way, saying that, of course, in a ever-changing life, in a sort of impermanent life, we cannot say, give me a moment for to basically plead for some time. It's extremely difficult to do that, or impossible to do that, actually. And so therefore, before this happens, then we must remind ourselves to reflect if there's anything that can be done. And we must pass away, forsaking all, but I, devoid of understanding, have for sake of friend and for life, provoked and brought about so many wrongs. But all my foes will cease to be, and all my friends will cease to be, and I will also cease to be. And likewise, everything will cease to be. So, basically, the priority of life. In a very materialistic oriented life, I would say. That's just what I think, maybe the contemporary way of putting it. In a Krishna way of putting it, it's exactly as it is. That in a non-spiritual life, a very worldly life, in a mundane life, the main priority is basically to survive, to find shelter, to free oneself from hunger, and then to move on to basically live. And then maybe on top of it, if all of those aspects are taken care of, maybe one can focus on other things. But otherwise, it mostly, revolves around that, over and over again. And now, in terms of survival for oneself, survival for, since there is already a self, then almost automatically there is a, there comes, what you call, the various, the various conditions that start to manifest, meaning then, those, with those who, whom I share the, let's say, in this case, the shelter, or, the various things. And then, with those whom I feel that I need to depend from, such as then the foes or the enemies. So all of these conditions start to manifest, start to arise. And so therefore, the whole existence, the whole experience simply sort of revolves around that, and then that's it. And so therefore then, in terms of a purpose, as we are all
looking forward to, sort of
always contemplating on the purpose of the meaning is somehow then sort of restricted to be limited only to that. So that's why now from a suppose if you sort of zoom out and see what this life can offer, what does it mean, and to look at the opportunity that it presents, and then where did and also how you obtained this appreciative existence, focus on all of that, then one can have a sort of a sense, an understanding that that all of these things are, as it is said, always fleeting. So therefore, the priority should be on something else. So that's why it says, for example, first of all, starting from the performance, from the passing. For friends, then yourself, or let's say others. Basically all those three. It's always changing, it's always evolving, so therefore it's exhausting it to put that as a priority. But therefore in this case we must I think as a practice for ourselves we must reflect, not just because in the teaching it says so, but we must reflect, with our own with our own mind, with our own consciousness, to see what is the real priority of life. So, of course, in actuality, this is the liberation should be for, let's say, women. So basically continuing from what I just said in terms of having misplaced one's priority, then as a result, not just of course now in this life, but it's possible. Maybe at the moment, maybe the logic makes sense that there is rebirth, that there is past rebirths, and there are possible future rebirths. By simply using, logic, sound logic, we may well not experience or remember directly, but if you think about it with sound logic, it does make sense. So, in that way, then It's possible that in all of our during all of our past lives, that just about as the state of the basic needs of survival that one has done so many it's unnecessary things or accumulated unnecessary causes. And so therefore in this life or in the next it's possible that should the conditions come together that it could arrive at any moment. So before it and before this opportunity right now that we have sort of slips away, that we must utilize this moment to first of all reflect very carefully and then apply the exact antidote as much as possible. So that it, it just doesn't sort of slips away from one's mind, and therefore it accumulates, without knowledge, without realization. And so that when I should or should the conditions come together, it strikes, just like I said in the beginning, that should the Lord of life come, then we are left overwhelmed completely without. Without much of a hope. So therefore, before such things take place, that right now, we don't have to panic. We don't have to over-worry ourselves. And instead, we can use our calm, composed mind to focus on this aspect, focus on the antidotes, and utilize the opportunity and the time that we have to take care of it. The thought came over, never to my mind, that I too am a brief and passing thing. And so, through hatred, lust, and ignorance, I have committed many sins. So, often it is the case where of course, there's nothing wrong with planning what we will do in the next few hours, or for tomorrow, or for the next week, next month, next year, and so on. Of course, there's nothing wrong with it. Should there be a possible future, then of course, it's always good to have some sort of idea of. What can be done. But sometimes this sort of simple use of practical, so sometimes we sort of depend too much on these practicalities, such as planning ahead. And so therefore we fixate ourselves to such a point that it causes a lot of, again, discomfort and confusion. Of course, I'm here very directly says this, of course, because of having been lost into extreme sort of mundane aspects of life, that to a point one has almost forgotten where they are. What could happen? And so therefore, I have completely, let's say now, forgotten that our true end, from the impermanent, our true end, ever changing. And so therefore, having wasted a lot of time and energy. So that's why it says here that then, as a result of that lack of knowledge, that lack of understanding, then one is engaged into a lot of unnecessary actions and have accumulated a lot of unnecessary karmas by means of the three roots, also the three poisons. So, never putting light or day, my life drain is constantly away, and from no other source does increase come. And how can there not be death for such as me? So, impermanence, or death, such as the end of life, it's, if you have to ask ourselves, what is the one thing that is very certain in this life, it is exactly that. Beyond that, all of the others are left in question, in a cloud of possibilities, nothing more. Whereas the exhaustions of, let's say, of karma or life, that's something that is very, very certain. And as I said before, whichever way you look at it, it is extremely guaranteed, let's say. So therefore, it never holds, or it never sort of waits or stops. Even during the night or even during the day, and it is simply constantly comes, goes away or comes closer to that. And of course, in order to increase, we may apply various remedies, methods, that an actual increase of that life span will never truly come. For example, we have nowadays in our century now, we have modern medicine, which is of course amazing. And other things like that. We ourselves as practitioners, they may practice various methods to also increase life or to increase lifespan. But nevertheless, I say the sort of in a existence of something that is always changing, the end is maybe one can postpone it, maybe for a certain while, but not more. At the end, we all must let go. So, for whatever we do in this life, an actual increase is very, very difficult to come. And so therefore, someone like him, of course, like he's not, but he's not trying to tell himself as as an example, but of course it could apply to anyone. Meaning everyone has quite certain of the impermanence of life, first of all, and the vulnerability towards the karma and pleasures. And seeing all of these obvious conditions, then it becomes quite certain that that this exhaustion will come sooner than later. So there I will prostrate upon my bed, and all around my family and friends that I am wrong shall be the one to feel the cutting or the thread of life. So Because it's always good to get those experiences. And then in time, one may have the ability to sort of now understand, okay, exact goes with what, whichever flavor is. That doesn't sound right. So therefore, now, basically, I'm putting forward a scenario of basically what happens in life, when the inevitable comes, that we cannot push it away, we cannot sort of ask for a second chance, all of those things just becomes a wishful and a hopeful way of thinking. And the only thing that sort of comes forward is the inevitable, and the desperate parts of life. So, for example, in this case, it still sounds quite good, in a way. Meaning that if of course, in here, it basically shows a person who is maybe just going through having a natural death on the bed. Maybe doesn't exactly describe whether it's one is caught by illness or anything like that. And then so one is surrounded by friends and families, I'm still very fortunate to have. And then also in this case that they may be also very vicious, hoping for maybe a better result and so on and so forth. But no matter what kind of positive intentions they have, no matter what they are praying for, when that inevitable comes, it's just it's completely overwhelming. And so therefore, then no matter, let's say, what one has, friends and families and whatnot, it doesn't make any kind of difference. And it's only at that time that if in the past one has been constantly absorbed by worldly matters, by in this case sensory matters, and then it is often the case for such individuals, it's only at that very moment that I'm suddenly realizing that, oh, now in this case, now the only support system, the only thing that I can rely on is none other than the virtue, which is here. So, but that's something that is very difficult to digest also, yes? Because now the reality has struck in such a way, at such a time, that it feels completely hopeless. Yes. And so, I believe that's exactly what happened to, let's say, the famous Devadatta family, when the inevitable came. Yes. That suddenly one realizes, sort of, when, as we say, everything sort of flashes before one's eyes. Yes. That suddenly one has realized all of the positive conditions he had. Actually, one of the best conditions, he said, most favorable. But it only at that very inevitable moment that he suddenly came to understanding. But then he was just, when he realized it was just too late, so the only sort of, the only thing one could say was, just the only thing that can be done was just despair, nothing more. So, therefore, now, O protectors, I, so little healing, hardly guessed at horror such as this, and all for this brief, transient existence, have done so many evil things. The day they take him to the scaffold, where they will tear off his limbs, A man is changed, transfigured by his fear, his mouth is dry, his eyes start from his brow. Exactly what Supernatural is. I feel like I'm just reading on and on and just. The coming verses gets more and more vivid. Yes. No need to say how stricken I shall be when overcome and sick with dreadful fear. I am seized by forms so horrible to see, the frightful servants of the Lord of Death. Who can give me safe protection from this horror, from this frightful day? And then I will search the four directions, seeking help with panic-stricken eyes. But in those four directions, no protection shall I find, and I shall sink into despairing woe. No refuge will be for me. At such time, what shall I do? These are the things that of course the humor. These are the things that we focus or we should focus, particularly when we are focusing on impermanence. All of us have engaged in the practice of mindfulness, and it always begins with the impermanence of life. So, with courage, with a brave heart, now these are sort of exact realistic scenario that has happened in the past and could happen. And so therefore, we shall try our best to the various teachings that put our heart into a world and then make sense and conclude that. So then now, yesterday we finished at the 32nd standing note, everything. Instead, it's a way to basically benefit ourselves. It's a way to gain experience. It's an extremely skillful way of actually utilizing the littlest of time and the littlest of energy. Without having to go through those direct experience and then again wait for another chance, let's say. And the next chance to come again is very difficult, as we know. So, therefore, by utilizing these skillful means, then whatever, let's say, lifespan that we have, whatever fragile yet opportunity, moments that we have, we use it to the fullest in this way. So therefore, I think it's very important that we should focus on this. Thus, from this day forward, I take refuge in the Buddha's guardians of beings, who will be able to protect all wanderers, those mighty ones who scatter every fear. So then, having considered the various possibilities, the various stages of despair, then it's only logical that we should seek support from someone who can, in this case also, can provide support also. If you ask for someone who cannot provide that support, of course, it's a bit more logical. So now, the reason why we can seek support from the Buddhas is simply because they have, first of all, complete understanding. They are aware of all of these circumstances, causes, effects, and also understand what are the conditions that lead to this. And not only having an idea of it, but direct experience, and have also obtained the antidote or the remedies of it as well. So, therefore, it makes sense that it gives assurance that only a Buddha can provide, in this case, the actual refuge, the actual protection. And in the Dhamma, they have realized in their hearts which draws away the terrors of samsara, and in all the host of the Bodhisattvas, likewise, are perfectly take refuge. So, then, if one takes refuge in the Buddha, which is the ultimate refuge, then automatically the path itself will come to us as a protection or a protector, and then also that of the Supreme Assembly, the Sangha. So in this case, maybe one can focus on one thing, on one particular thing, which is that it is said that all the things that have compounded, that have aggregated in our existence, eventually must fade away, eventually must end, or exhaust, or dissolve. But if you ask ourselves, what is the one thing that that compounds together and that doesn't separate away? Direct experiences, understanding of truth, understanding of very simply how impermanent life is. That's direct experience, that direct truth is. Now, these are not tainted by fleeting emotions or karmas or habits. It's direct experience, direct truth. So compounding these kind of wisdoms together, and then it will basically result in something that doesn't change, doesn't alter, doesn't fade. So if you have to rely on something, then it will be none other than that. So therefore, we take refuge in Buddha Dhamma and Sangha. Of course, to begin with, we rely on the support of the absolute refuge, the Buddha, and then the Dhamma and the Sangha, of course. meaning the absolute refuge, because Buddha would be the only one who has now obtained the absolute remedy by having renounced all of the causes and effects and conditions of the karma impression. And then also understood, having realized all knowledge, yes, the knowledge of how things are, yes, the knowledge of the way things are, and its entirety. So, therefore, it's the absolute refuge, and seeking towards that serves as a cause. Of course, now, in order to have, as a sort of now, the actual aim is that we rely on the Buddha who can provide such support, for now and ever, for now as well as for later. But in the end, our actual aim should be that now we ourselves want to also come to a point where we have to also seek for no more refuge, not having to depend all the time. That simply oneself is absolutely liberated. And in terms of now the attitude, of course, then not only not having to depend on other things or depend on refuge, but at the same time able to provide refuge for others. So those are the things that we have to focus on. Built by grace beside myself with anguish, to some of the Bhagavad, I will give myself my body. I myself will give to Madhukosha, gentle and melodious, to him whose deeds of mercy and favor, my Lord, Avalokita, I cry out from the depths of misery. Protect me now, an evildoer. So, accordingly, then we ask for the refuge of the assembly, the realized Buddha Sadhavas, in the path of the Buddha Sadhavas, when we take refuge, it is very important that the Sangha is none other than Buddha Sadhavas, and not only just Buddha Sadhavas, but also not just Buddha Sadhavas, but only realized Buddha Sadhavas. Such as explained here, that of the son of the father, and Madhukosha, and Avalokita, and so on. So, in the same way as they have taken refuge in the beginning, and in the same way as they have remained and continued in their pursuit for absolute awareness. In this case, having pursued absolute refuge. And so, in the same way then, I shall follow their footsteps and ask them for their support. So once we have that kind of clarity, that kind of understanding, then our condition, or the condition of our mind, becomes extremely fertile, and as a result, then it becomes a very receptive, let's say, through them actually receive the blessings of the refuge. Now to the Noble One, Akasha Garba, and to Isti Garba, we are from my heart, I hope, to all protectors, great, compassionate, I cry to them in search of refuge. To Vajrapani I shall fly, for at the sight of him all vengeful things, like Yama's host, escape in terror to the four dimensions. So, now, having, I'm sure for those of you who have maybe, who may have read, or who may have studied, or read the Buddhist Deva or Shantideva, in terms of the aspirations, in terms of the attitude, of course, it's not deviating from the Buddha's attitude at all. Of course, therefore, it is called Buddha's way, or the, you know, the way of the Buddha. But in terms of our, the difference maybe one can spot is that of the way one goes about it also, which is interesting. Particularly the way of the some of the other aspiration prayer, of course it's again the same, that one is again seeking for liberation, one is again seeking to accumulate merit, one is again seeking for cultivation of the bodhicitta. But we can use our calm, composed mind to focus on this aspect, focus on the antidotes, and utilize the opportunity and the time that we have to constantly seek for putting oneself as an example, putting oneself as then one seeks for support for oneself and oneself. So, but this does not, should not necessarily confuse us in terms of the benefit or the result. The result is always the same, simply because the aim is always towards the benefit of others. That if there are differences in terms of generative Buddhism, there are differences in terms of how we initiate that. It's mainly because of one's own, let's say, individual habitual patterns, individual comfort, I think. Sometimes it's easier for us if you begin with the attitude that one must help oneself first in order to benefit others. Sometimes it's more beneficial to think that to initiate ourselves in a way that that I must seek for support others first, and then only then I myself then liberate. So it's the only, the difference is only there in terms of the initiative or the initiative aspect of the generating of the jiva. Otherwise, the result is always the same. So, in the same way then, one calls for the eight realized bodhisattvas for refuge, for protection, so that the various obstacles that one faces shall all be driven away and destroyed. So, of course, this is all this is put in a very poetic and very visual and very sort of it's a very dramatic way of this presentation. But in the end, of course, the seeking of refuge will guide and protect us at the end from one's own, it's the inner confusion, meaning the inner struggles of the habits of relying on the affective emotions, such as ignorance, anger, and so on. So us seeking for refuge, of course, finally it will protect us from those. Because when one has been absorbed, thoroughly absorbed by these afflictive emotions, then it does what causes for us to, let's say now, maybe have impressions, let's say, of obstacles, challenges, faults, to a point maybe spirit, let's say. All of this becomes sort of manifest outward to them. Because the mind has been absorbed thoroughly. So therefore, as then we have these kind of presentations where, or let's say, guidelines where we have to sort of protect from others, protect from outer forces and so on. But of course, in truth, in truth, well, none of these actually truly exist. It's only manifesting because one has been thoroughly absorbed by these afflictive emotions. That suddenly there is a sort of like a figment of it. Formerly, your words I have transgressed, but having seen these terrors all around, I come to you for refuge. Pray, swiftly burn away my fear. So, with total acknowledgement, understanding that only the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha can ultimately liberate me from all of these fears, then wholeheartedly we shall call for their support, for their refuge. So therefore, when you call for these blessings, when you call for these, or cry out, as I say here, for the protection and so on, blessings, whatever you call it, it's, of course, to begin with, it's always possible that it comes with emotion, you know. It's normal, but possible without emotions, without being too diluted by emotions. Maybe a little bit here and there, maybe it comes along, maybe it's normal, but possible with clarity. So, because if it's with clarity, then even for the blessing, it's to receive the blessing would be much swifter, actually. That is the thing. You must. For if alarmed by common ailments, I must implement the doctor's words. Now, when I need to speak of whom, also of when I am constantly brought low by ills like the lust and falls a hundredfold. So, I think it's pretty logical. Experiences. First of all, the results, the actual confusion that one experiences, the results is. And then, also the causes of it, to look at all, in each of these aspects, in a very a professional way. The way I keep saying professional way, it doesn't sound too right, it doesn't sound right, but I want to kind of convey is that professional in terms of without emotion. Because often one's own habits or habitual passion or tendency sort of speak on behalf of ourselves, let's say. And so often that leads to a lot of unnecessary ends. So therefore, for example, focusing on confusion means like Nyoma, the glacier, focusing on the direct experience of the confusion, which is like the dukkha. It can be on a physical level, it can be on a mental level, all of this. When you have to think of it, maybe it's uncomfortable. And the reason why it's making us uncomfortable to look at it is often, personally, this is my own interpretation, is that it's often the case where our habits sort of speak for ourselves, and as a result, we feel uncomfortable to look at it, or to examine it, or to face it. So, therefore, if we have a professional approach, meaning that now, without getting too influenced by the habits, and sort of speaking, sort of taking the matter into your own hand, and you yourself then look at it, you'll be, more professional in a way. Meaning there is no that kind of examination or reflection is not compromised by the glaciers and so on. And as a result, then one can sort of, first of all, one has the courage to look at the symptoms as exactly what it is, first of all. And then at the same time, then you also have the courage, you gain the courage on the spot to also then accept the actual remedies and have the courage to also apply it. So in the same way, in here, it is obvious that if one now with this courage, with this professionalism, if I'm able to now accept these faults or faults of samsara or faults of disclosures, then it will become obvious that I must rely on the actual antidote. And if by one of these alone the dwellers in the world are all thrown down, and if no other remedy exists, no other healing elsewhere to be found, that the words of the old doctrine, which uproot our every day, the thought to turn on him, deaf ears is abject and contemptible stupidity. So, by, now the doctor who would, or the person who would understand all of these symptoms and who can provide a good remedy is none other than the, let's say, the all-knowing doctor. Then it's obvious, as is said here, that we have to be extremely unwise. We have to be extremely confused. We have to be extremely careless and hopeless not to take that doctor's diagnosis or treatment. Because only the Buddha will have, as I said earlier, only the Buddha will have direct experience of all of these symptoms, and no other. We can search the world, we can search our existence, our entirety of our existence for someone who understands these symptoms. But at best, one might have maybe some crashes of understanding, but no more. The reason, of course, is due to
eons and eons of experience. Can you hear me at the back? No. Okay. You'll just wait. Is it working? No.
just a moment.
You say about negativity emotion, purified or not purified, you say this phrase, yeah? I don't understand what you mean not purified, purified negativity emotion. Because in my understanding, purifying of negativity emotion is transform them in a kind of wisdom. It was in the beginning, like a past explanation, I don't know. Just a detail.
Probably I'm going to say something along the line of purifying or not.
Yeah, maybe.
But nevertheless, I still didn't really get the question.
I can say more. I question at this moment. Yeah, this was unclear, and that's why I'm asking. Sorry if it's not the correct question.
At which verse was it?
In the beginning, it was before explanation of text. You just explain something, and I forgot the context. Just a moment, it was unclear for me. I'm sorry.
At the beginning, I was trying to basically remind ourselves that. It's, in short, that the, any kind of negativity, be it physically, the cause that we accumulated physically or verbally or mentally, all of this, is not inherent. That's the most, in short, that's the key point. And therefore, it's purifiable. Because it is not, if it's inherent, then it's a part of yourself. And if you try to purify, first of all, it might not be, be purified, first of all. Yeah. Even if it's possible, by some means, then it's almost like destroying a part of yourself. And so therefore, the main thing to understand is that it's simply not a part of yourself, part of your nature.
Dear Kamapa, thanks for studying Shantideva's text with us. Yesterday you mentioned that reaching enlightenment or being on the way, it's a very long way. I heard from Shantideva himself that he was a monk, and he was actually quite a lazy monk, I heard. And that everything that we are studying now, he basically realized overnight. Is that true, and how can it happen so quickly?
Because it's contradictory. Well, that's what he was known for. That's how he appeared, let's say, at that time. That's the thing. There are many parts of his lifestyle that maybe that may seem very uncommon to us, that may seem maybe contradictory. But the thing was that not that he was enlightenment from the beginning, let's say. Of course, he also had a journey in his previous lifetimes. But by the time when he lived that rebirth or lived that incarnation, let's say, by then he was already a very experienced, realized Bodhisattva already, actually. And so therefore, at the time, of course, realized Bodhisattva was often would sort of observe the circumstances, meaning of what the main circumstance will be in ourselves, sentient beings. And how can they be motivated? How can they be benefited? And sometimes, then, due to these sort of what seems like, you know, uncommon to us, unforeseen to us, maybe radical ways of benefiting them, then they often appear as though, you know, as though they may be a little bit different, you know. And so as a result, he's for a while, I think, during his stay in Nalanda University, he didn't appear for, I think, for most part of his stay there as basically a very laid-back, how do you say, or as you put it, a very lazy scholar there. And then I think he has he obtained even a name for it as well. And but in truth, there was a realizing of Sadhana. And in order to, you know, overwhelm the individual's pride, individual's emotions, and then he appeared in that way. And when the opportune moment came, then he sort of conquered their egos and benefited them. And so that's what we have here now. And as a result, then he taught us. So, now the answer to your question comes of if we can now realize this or not. Possibility is, if you put it sort of forcefully like that, and the possibility is there, of course, in overnight we can overcome. Why? Simply because we have the potential. But is it logical, you see, now, in terms of putting together with these various conditions that we have, various histories that we have, histories in terms of now the very life that we have, the very rigors that we have, is already like the proof of what happened in the past, or what we have done in the past. And so, considering that, then it, and sort of, as I said again, professionally looking at it, I say, it's without emotion, it does get a little bit fun.
Just one more clarification, please. You mentioned that we have to liberate ourselves from klesha, habitual patterns,
yes,
and karma. Do you only mean negative karma, or you mean all kinds of karma? And how would it feel if we are liberated from karma?
Oh, yes. Liberated in terms of right now, we are dictated by karma, I'd say. We are controlled by karma, in a way. So that we think that we are in control, but it's the other way around. It's often the karma that is dictating every move, every turn. And therefore, we have to come to an understanding, first of all, identify that we are at that state. And then, secondly, then, try to gain the strength, you know, gain the ability to not be bullied by it or be overwhelmed by it. So that's kind of like the liberation of it. And once we are liberated from it, we have to no more fear that, aspect of phenomena, let's say. And if need be, we can even utilize that aspect of it for positive purposes. So therefore now, for example, if we accumulate, that therefore we have now, if we apply the 10 virtues, proper conducts, the practices of the Brahmacharis, all of these meritorious actions, again it's accumulating a type of karma. And so therefore, one might feel that there is a contradiction, but in fact not. The only reason why we accumulate these merits is so that that it will be beneficial in terms of now supporting others. For oneself, maybe if it's just for one day's liberation, it's possible to say that there isn't much of a need, you know, we'll just simply focus on escaping from it, or freeing ourselves from it. And in that sense, we have to think of others, we have to think of the benefits of others. Then there is a need of now even gaining the ability to sort of even utilize the karmas.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Kamapa, for sharing your deep insight. Somewhere in the middle of your lecture, you said something about, I'll just have a look. Yeah, that we should start in a traditional way to know what is what.
Yes.
And to taste something bitter, etc., etc. And then later on, we will know how to make our own flavors.
Right.
And I don't know exactly how to frame my question. What exactly do you mean? How exactly to do that? Mm-hmm. If I can ask in a stupid way, I could say, should we then simply discard, forget some of the very deep things that we have studied in the text and that have somehow been, also as you implied in your lecture, can be very painful to realize? How to do this switch?
Right. I think the only way we can do it is by giving, by perseverance, let's say. By giving it time. Meaning, practicing it over and over again. To begin with, certain things might seem not favorable, not pleasant. Of course, it depends on the temporary habit, let's say. Sometimes sweet things can seem unpleasant. Sometimes the most bitter ones might seem pleasant. Or otherwise, the other way around. But whatever be it, as long as there is a sense of pleasant and unpleasantness and unpleasantness, it means that there is something that, there is something to do. There is something to work on, right? Or develop, or progress, a good way of putting it. So, the only way we can sort of now overcome this and gain something productiveness from it is to give time. Practicing it repeatedly, but again, not with haste, of course, but with patience. Simple as that. Of course, when I say something about flavors, maybe on the spot, I did say that maybe not the right choice of word, because what I was trying to say was that in terms of creating flavors, now. For oneself, it's all about understanding it. It's all about now overcoming the differences. So that there's no more unpleasant experience anymore. Now after that, now we have to think about the benefit of others. So for that, then we may have to think about various means in the world. For some, as I said earlier, bitter might be helpful. For some, sweet might be the exact flavor of this. So So then, by then, you have accomplished your own goal or aim. But now you have the time and ability to focus on how to do the same for others, to accomplish their aim. So, in that aspect, then, you learn the art of mixing up, maybe mixing the papers, let's say. So that whatever is most beneficial, whatever is most appropriate on the spot, in the moment, exactly provide that.
Thank you.
So then, I think we will stop it today. So then, just like yesterday, we will dedicate again all of our merits to all sentient beings. We can begin very simply with right now also, if it's practical for yourselves. Right now, it must be even for nature. We dedicate, not just for doing the dedication, but every aspect. If it's comfortable, if it's practical, if it's beneficial for you, then first of all, think about very well, you know, logically, think of the individuals that you know in terms of things. In this life that you're close to, you have some positive wishes for yourself, to whom you feel close to, let's say, to begin from there. And then think of again their, let's say, loved ones, or their families, and their friends, and then sort of multiply that. Sort of, and the sort of logic become wider and wider, and at the end, it will reach out to all sentient beings at the end. So, this option for yourselves. And so then, now for all of the benefits, benefit in terms of the temporary benefits, as well as permanent benefits, and then we dedicate whatever the merit we have accumulated right now from listening to the timeless teaching, and other than that, all the merits that we have accumulated from the beginning of this time, and we offer it wholeheartedly and to all sentient beings. So now the Tangje Zimba Tongne Nyinga Dhamma Bhajan Jira Nanjia Bhava Tupai Siddhi